Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the worlds of law and politics, which you watch me cover on television every day, to talk about the world, but often of arts and entertainment and theater. But today we don't really move too far away from the world of politics because we're going to be talking to an author who has just written an autobiography about her career. But there's something special about it because, of course, when we're recording this, it is June, it is Pride Month. And so the story of my guest, Karen Soult, is a very powerful one. Now, in book form, called "Hiding for My Life: Being Gay in the Navy," and obviously something we want to do during Pride Month to respect and show respect for those who not only are of the LGBTQ plus community, but also those who have served in our country and the burdens that may have provided over the years. Karen, good to see you. And I know your title is retired U.S. Navy Chief Senior Petty Officer. So should I call you Chief?
You can call me Karen Paul. Thank you. And
Okay.
thanks for having me. It's
Sure.
great to be here.
So but let me start by asking you, why write the book? You went through what you did, and we're going to talk about that. But why did you feel this is something that needed to be? Because when you write a book, it could be about you, but it might also be about sharing the message with others.
Yeah, I think what happened for me was that, when I retired from the Navy, I had been in this place of hiding for being gay for 22 years. When I retired, I thought I would be free. I thought I would just be out. I thought I would just be like no longer looking over my shoulder, and that's not what happened for me. What happened was that conditioning was very much embedded into my everything, my system, but it's mostly my nervous system. I tried really hard to just be myself, but I could really always just feel kind of that fear in my body. And in 2017, I had an experience, which was 11 years after retiring. I had an experience where I could tell that I was still very much in hiding, realized that I still was, that there was this fear that was still very prevalent. And so I started writing a book. I had a really, that was a very pivotal time for me because I got very sick when I came out of that illness. I had this awareness of how I went into hiding, what happened, why I went into hiding, and not just for being gay, but all of the ways that I had gone into hiding and how I needed to come back out. And so I started writing a self-help book about that. And then in 2020, I had been writing that book for about 3 years when, I was encouraged to turn that book into a memoir. And I was very afraid to do that, mainly because of the stigma, because of the danger that would put me in, and because, like, it wasn't a story that was out there. And so, I think there's a reason why that story's not out there, because it's scary. And so I wrote the book that I needed to read, essentially. I needed a book that would validate my experience, would show me that what I went through was something that a lot of people went through, and would give me the permissions to free myself. And so I that's what I did. And now sharing it, my hope is that it will do that for others.
Were your concerns about what would happen to you from coming out, or was it about the impact on others like family and friends and significant others? You do make the point in the book, you've changed some names here,
Right.
obviously, which is a smart thing to do. Some people may not want to be publicly outed as part of the story. That's up to them and you. But was it about you, or was it about protecting or hiding from others?
Both. Both. So anybody that's in the book that has a significant role in the book has read the book. And that was one of the first things that I did, is I sent my initial good draft to anybody that it would affect, that I where I knew if I knew where they were at. If I didn't know where they were at, or if it was somebody that I had a huge falling out with, or somebody that I was afraid of, I just changed their names. I changed their details to protect them, and also not, I didn't want to out anybody. I think I don't want to violate anybody that way. But most of the people who are in the book, I wouldn't say most, I'd say a good percentage of the people who are in the book, said that they wanted to use their normal name.
So you didn't grow up in the city of Chicago or in the metropolitan neighborhoods of New York or all of that. So, I mean, one of the reasons, because some people might be watching or listening to us right now and saying, what's the big deal? Well, because it's 2024. But talk about When this was all taking place, when you were young, in fact, you never even wanted to go into the Navy. That was not a goal of yours. So you said, gee, talk about how you were dealing with these issues at the time. And if you were dealing with them at the time, maybe the military wasn't the place to go at that time.
So I didn't know that I was gay until I joined the Navy. And I did. I grew up in a very small town in northern Arizona. You know, I grew up in the 60s and 70s and early 80s, and gay people weren't visible. So I did not know one gay person until I joined the Navy. I didn't even know gay was an option. I knew that I struggled with, like, I was a serious tomboy. I was the first girl in my hometown to play Little League. I struggled with my gender. I did. I struggled with my identity, but I didn't know why. I just knew that I didn't. The limitations of being a girl were something I struggled with since I was a toddler. And so, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, if you grow up in a hometown and like everybody's a football player, but you don't like football, you like baseball, and you just don't understand why you're different. You like baseball so much, but nobody plays baseball. And you just don't really know because there's nobody out there that plays baseball. It's kind of like that. It's like I didn't realize that being gay was an option. And even if I had, I think in my hometown, I would have had to have been very closeted, which I think many people were. In small conservative hometowns, I think that's still the reality today for many people. It's still like I'm back in my hometown now, still super conservative. I don't know. I don't see like gay couples walking down the road holding hands. I have lived in progressive towns. Just being in the military, like San Diego, it's different here. It's just different. Every place is different.
For a lot of people, much of the emotional crises moments have to do with family, parents, siblings.
Yeah,
you had all of those to deal with. And here's the thing. Some people would say, well, fortunately, you know, with regard to my siblings, well, they're cool because, you know, hey, we're siblings. We grew up together. And parents, well, they love me no matter what. So parents will just say, I accept you. Now, again, this is your story. But one of the key reasons you're writing this is that other people need to read this book. It wasn't your experience to have that kind of support for family. So number one, what did you face? And number two, what's your suggestion for other people right now who say, yeah, that's what I think I'd get from my family?
Yeah, when I first came out, you know, I was so relieved to figure out like why I was different and what it was. So I was super relieved to figure out that I'm gay. So one of the first things I did is I shared that with my mom, and her response is a very typical response, I think, is, you know, you're confused. You know, you've always dated boys. Like, I just think you're hanging with the wrong crowd, kind of that response. But how I internalized that was she doesn't accept me. And so that wasn't.
She didn't understand you.
She didn't understand me. But how I internalized it at the time was this is not okay.
No.
The truth was, is that she didn't understand. And number two, she was worried. She was really worried about me. Cause I think for a lot of parents, when they know that their child is, part of the queer community, that increases their level of, danger in the world. And so no parent, you know, every parent is going to be, I think, concerned to some extent, and some are going to be a little more open than others.
Well, then some would say, and by the way, I know the answer to this question as I pose it. Some would say, well, then your siblings came through for you. They were right there to support you.
Yeah. So I have two brothers. My older brother is a Baptist minister. And so he loves me. Actually, I have a good relationship with everybody in my family. But that doesn't mean we talk about my gayness. Like we talk about, like my brothers and I talk about my mom. You know, we don't talk about my personal life because we're never going to agree. So, you know, his belief system is not my belief system, and that's okay. Like he can have his beliefs and I can have my beliefs, and we've learned how to navigate that. But that initial response from him, you know, back when I was 18, 19, 20, again, you know, I'm just trying to find my way and I'm being told that who I am is not okay. And so I think for young people, you know, what I didn't have that a lot of young people have today is I did not have visibility. I didn't know anybody that was gay. Young people today, they have social media, they have TV. They know that there are gay people in the world. That wasn't my experience. And so they might figure out their identity a lot sooner than I did, right? And not have to go through a lot of the turmoil that I did and other people of my generation. You know, I would say to anybody, like, if you come out to a family member that says, I don't accept who you are, that's okay. That's something that they're going to have to work through. It doesn't mean that, like, it's right or it's good or I would be happy about that. But find people who you can be yourself with, and find people who do accept you. And, you know, don't just take that judgment from one person and turn that into that has anything to do with you. That has to do with somebody else's judgment about what it is you represent to them.
So as we talk, we're not locking things into date. So I'll try and clear things as we go, because some would say, well, if all this was going on and you knew this, why go in the Navy anyway? And when you entered the Navy, it was even before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was right. Supposedly going to provide some kind of protection. But you were before that. But the reality is you entered the Navy and even at that point didn't realize you were gay.
Right. I did not realize I was gay. I mean, I got blindsided into the Navy by a really sneaky recruiter who told me that we were going to go down to Phoenix and talk to some people. And where he took me to was MEPS, which is the military enlistment processing station. And by the end of that day, I was raising my right hand with a bunch of other misfits and didn't really realize what was happening to me. I was 18 and just really naive, and also pretty deep into some alcohol addiction at the time.
Can I just ask you, because you just said with some other misfits, and we will have people who are in the military or served in the military who might hear you say that and go, wait a minute. So let me just, what do you mean by that? And I don't think you're saying that everybody who goes in the military meets that category.
No, I think some people join the military because they absolutely want to serve their country. I also think it gives just like it did me, it'll give you a home, it gives you a family, it gives you a roof over your head, it gives you a community, it gives you a paycheck, it gives you benefits. There are many reasons that people join the military. And then there are some of us who don't really have anything going for us, and we end up going in the military because we either get tricked like I did, or it's a way out of another situation. Back in the day,
how did they trick you?
How did he trick me?
Yeah.
So what he told me was that we were going to go speak to some people. He did not tell me that we were going to go, that I was going to be enlisting. And so what he did was he took me down to Phoenix. I thought I was going to be speaking to some people.
But you had to sign forms at some point, right?
I did. So I was going through each day and I was like, I would go to one desk and I would speak to somebody and they would ask me some questions about my life. And then I would go to another desk and I would speak to somebody and they would ask me some questions about my life. And I was just really, I don't blame the military for this and I don't blame him. I mean, I think recruiters have a way sometimes of getting what they need done. And I just, when I left in the car with him that morning to go to Phoenix, I didn't realize I was going to Phoenix to enlist in the Navy.
Could you have said no out of curiosity? Was it maybe the strength of your personality? But when you got there, could you have said, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Thanks for the trip to Phoenix, but this is not what I'm doing.
You know, I could have, but I don't really remember. I think what happened for me was that I got into some kind of, you know, I wasn't around anybody that I knew. I was just going from desk to desk talking to people. And I don't know that I had the sense of self or the agency at that age to like really speak up for myself and to say like, what's happening here? I wasn't that kid at the time. I was a rebel and a misfit and a partier and a clown, but I wasn't somebody who really had a great sense of self at the time. I could have, but I was 100 miles away from home. You know, I was kind of isolated. I mean, there's lots of things that go into, you know, somebody signing on a dotted line. And, you know, this was back, this was in 1983. Today, with the awareness that I think young kids have of the world, one of them might have said, hey, I have rights. I think for me at the time, I just didn't realize what was happening. And I didn't know that I didn't really have rights.
So it also seems as though that decision was not about, I'm wrestling with being gay, I'm going to leave my family, because you didn't know that at the time. So this was really about you and the fact that you were a bit lost at that time as far as what the future was going to hold, right? So let's put you on the ship and or on your first ship, because that's really That's where your awareness came through. So I guess thanks to the Navy for helping you find out who you are.
Yeah, super grateful for the Navy. I mean, I really think like I was on a one-way track to nowhere, and that nowhere was could also have been a very dangerous place. So especially with addiction issues, even using drugs, I had to get a drug waiver to go into the Navy. So, but I got on board my first ship, still super struggled. Some of that was because now there's, I figured out that I was gay within my first year of being in the Navy. But one of the first things I had to deal with was being a female on board ship. And that was back in the day when women were just going on board ship. And so, there was a huge integration hurdle that that sailors were going through at the time, and I just so happened to fall into that that time frame. So yes, the first, especially probably 3 4 months on the ship were very difficult. Also, my first ship was also in Charleston, South Carolina, and I grew up in Northern Arizona. So culturally, it was a lot different. Humidity a lot different. Everything about South Carolina very different than my hometown. So for a long time, I really felt like I made a huge mistake. It took me a while to settle in and start to really love the Navy.
Which you stayed there until 2006, so apparently something caught on and kept you there. So, in terms of the realization that you're gay, because again, some people believe it's what we call sexual orientation. I'm born that way. Other people refer to it as sexual preference, which personally don't accept that concept, which is just, I think I'll be gay. that's more fun, something like that. But for you, were these feelings inside you? Was it something that you saw on the ship? Was it that you noticed your feeling? Because you had dated people like who you call in the book, Scott and Jim. There were men in your life. Was it that you felt differently as you looked at certain women? What triggered the recognition that you're part of that community?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, in high school, I had amazing boyfriends. I dated the nicest guys, but I just never, something just always felt off. And so I didn't know why. I mean, all of my friends were straight, most of them. I mean, maybe a couple were in the closet as well. But, they were all dating guys and they were all loving it. And I was just like, I was struggling. Wasn't, just never really connected, but didn't know why. Just kind of figured I hadn't found the right guy yet. And then I met a friend on board my first ship when we were working in the chief's messes, which is where the chiefs eat. And she's gay, and so she at one point confided in me, and
Because she suspect you were.
she did suspect I was. I didn't still suspect that I
Right,
was.
I right.
Yeah, but she suspected that I was. So she confided in me, and I had met some lesbians in boot camp at that point. So I knew that being gay was a thing by that point, but I wasn't hanging out with anybody that's gay. And then one weekend, she invited me to come to her apartment because she was living off base with her partner. So she would leave the ship every weekend, and I would go to hotel rooms every weekend and just try to get off the ship. And so one weekend she invited me to go to her house. And then that weekend, all of her gay friends showed up. And it was really the first time that I just felt really like solid in my body. And I can't really explain what it was, but there was just this flow of connection and energy. And I didn't feel like, I mean, I just felt like I fit in with this group of people. And, so yes, she and her partner knew that I was gay, and I think what they knew or what they figured was that once I found my people, that I would also start to find myself, and they were right.
So, because all sorts of people they watch or hear us, there are those who would say, aha, it's because of that experience or somebody made you turn gay, something like that. So if you could, just a moment of like, was it a light bulb coming on? Was it a preferential choice to go this? I mean, I think we ought to clarify for people just what it is that happened in that moment that you realize you're gay, because I'm going to guess it was always there.
Yeah, it was always there. I mean, I think when I was young, like I can remember having crushes on two girls, but I didn't connect those with being like sexually attracted to. I just knew that I would consider that more probably of an infatuation when I was a child. It was confusing, right? I can't really explain it other than something just fit. Like when I was at parties with, people I was growing up with, so guys and girls, I was typically pretty drunk. And I don't know. I mean, I just, there was something that just felt different with this group when they were affectionate with me, when we danced together, when, just the way that we were all together, it just felt right. It for like the first time in my life, I felt like I was with the right people.
And then let me just fast forward you to when you met the first person. We're not going to get very, detailed here in terms of physical relationships, but the point is, at some point, it's one thing to be around fellow gay people and
Right.
say, this is where I'm comfortable. And then there's another point where you say, wait, this is somebody I'm interested in.
Yeah, with that group of with it, when I was with that group of people, I met my first girlfriend, and she was on a different ship, a couple piers down from my ship, and I fell madly in love with her, and I uprooted my whole life to be with her, and it was different. I didn't feel like when I was with men, I did not feel the same way as I did when I was with her. The level of I don't know, it was completely different, and I loved it. I loved the fact that I understood who I am, helped make things make sense of a lot of things in my life.
Of course, what you couldn't do at that time was, now that you, it sounds, you found yourself, you found a potential partner to be with and all that. But about the last thing you were going to do was to say, let's tell the world.
Yeah. No, when I met her, this was probably 1984 and 85, and in the military at the time, gay service members were being hunted by the Navy. So that in the Navy Criminal Investigative Service would try to catch us, hunt us down, catch us, root us out. And so, falling in love and figuring out that I'm gay, like, opened up so many doors for me personally, but professionally. The ramifications and the stakes got super high.
Were you
And
scared
so,
about that? Were you
oh
scared about
yeah.
being caught?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I learned very quickly, the rules of the road, looking over my shoulder. I think I've been to gay bars maybe a couple times in my life, but even at gay bars, I was always afraid that somebody from the ship would be there as kind of a plant. The other thing I worried about is if the gay bar got busted, because this was in Charleston and then in Georgia. So if the gay bar got raided or busted and the police came, it would get back to the command because we were there on our military IDs. There was things. I never went to Pride. There was just things that I knew I wasn't safe in the world like other people were. And so I learned just like everybody else did. That there was two parts of me. There was the sailor by day and there was the lesbian by night. And those two worlds did not coexist.
And in fact, other people on the ship, and what I have is a person you refer to as H in the story, so you know who I'm talking about. And it's in many ways fascinating because he's in the early part of your career, he's in the latter part of your career. I don't want to give anything away there, but my reason for bringing him up right now is to simply make the point: here was somebody who was straight, he was married, but he fell for you, and not realizing what your deal was. The point is, you couldn't sit down with him and say, H, we need to talk.
Right. Yeah, I met him. I had about, I would guess about 8 years in the Navy when I met him. And then I had a 3 year period where he was in my life. And when I met him, I mean, we bonded. He's my mentor. He was a Master Chief. He was an E9, I was an E6. It was before I made chief, but we bonded. I wanted to be just like him. He was my mentor. I idolized him, but of course I did not tell him that I'm gay. If when I had met him, I could have said, I could have been out, like sailors today are out. And so, somebody has a crush on you, you're like, dude, like I'm gay. And typically
If you met him today, if you met him today, by the way, and you went in today or something like that, you could meet him and say, oh, no, this isn't right to me. You'd say that to him.
But for 3 years, he had this vision that he was in love with me and that I was in love with him. And that wasn't my vision. But because I was hiding and because he was hiding, neither of us ever talked about it. And until he disclosed to me that he did have feelings for me. And then, you know, all of that could have been, you know, if we rewind it, that would not have happened if I could have served openly. That situation that turned out to be one of the most devastating experiences of my life would never have happened if I was a sailor who could have been out and open and just living her life and serving.
That's one of the stories people need to read in the book. And I think we're going to leave it there because I don't want to give too much away. But you just said devastating. And let me just say that where that story goes is shocking and it's real. And so it did make me step back and just realize, you know, for all the, even if you try and give the military some good reasons for wanting to have the policies that it had, nobody could have ever seen those kinds of consequences in terms of what happened to you, what happened to him. Nobody Right. could have seen that coming and maybe wouldn't have had that policy if they could have foreseen that.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, when I talk about hiding and, you know, it doesn't just affect gay people. So of course, you know, I was closeted, very closeted, so closeted that he didn't even know I was gay. But I had a partner at the time. Like I had a partner when he told me that he's in love with me. I think we had been, my partner and I had been together 5.5 years. We weren't together because we were separated because of different commands at the time. But I was hiding so well that it didn't just impact me. It impacted the people that I served with. And that's why my belief is that when we have policies that force people into the closet, it doesn't just hurt those people. It, especially when you're in the military and you're working side by side with people who you trust with your life and they trust you with their life. You have to, but then you're not being honest because you can't be honest because if you're honest, you get kicked out. It's just, it was such a web that I didn't know how to get myself out of. But it was, you know, it was survival tactics, really.
And the relationship, I want to talk about Sue, if we can, an important relationship in your life. But what is really interesting, or whatever category you are, who read this book, the bottom line is, as we look at your multi-year relationship with Sue, it didn't have to be. I mean, take the sex out of it. Take the, I mean, the, you know, the gender out of it. Take the gay straight out of it. The bottom line is you had difficulties like any other couple would have it this day.
Oh, yeah.
There won't be anybody that won't find themselves in the world of what you had to deal with. Certainly if they were in the military, regardless of their orientation.
Yeah. I mean, we had additional challenges mainly because if we were married, we were very committed to each other, but if we were straight, we would have been stationed together in the same location and we would have been kept together. What we were challenged with was that we kept getting separated from each other. And so, you know, she was on active duty, I was on active duty. So the Navy considered us single. And so they would send her away. And then when we were away from each other at one point for 3.5 years, and you can't tell me a couple in the world that would not have challenges with that kind of a situation. And, you know, the good
by the
news
way,
is
a straight at that time, a straight couple in the Navy would not have been separated. That we would have been together.
No,
right?
It would have never happened. Right. And that was, you know, that's the challenge with being gay is that if, you know, we could have stayed together, then we could have had the career together. But what we realized that 3.5 years was devastating for both of us. And that's the same time that also I had that experience with H. When we got back together, both of us were chiefs at the time. Like both of us were like having amazing careers, but because we, and then both of us made senior chief, but because we chose not to be separated from each other again. And so both of our careers took a hit because of that. And so they would offer, we ended up in San Diego. They would offer, you know, I'd call for orders and my detailer would say, yeah, I have something, a really demanding assignment in Washington, D.C. And I'd say, I can't go to Washington, D.C. I need something in San Diego. And so then my detailer would give me some less demanding assignment in San Diego, which then hurt my career, but kept me with my partner.
But you also had moments where they would not let you stay together. You were promised early on in the career, you
right.
were promised you would be together. And they was like, sorry, you're not going to be.
Right. And that's why when we did get back together, both of us took assignments less demanding assignments to stay together. And we were fortunate that we were able to do that for both of our the rest of our careers. But yeah, we got separated, and it was painful.
You wrote in the book that you really had this dilemma. You said either be yourself and try not to get caught, or don't be yourself and be miserable. That is truly a dilemma.
Well, I think that's what happens to gay people, is that, you know, if I'm so closeted that I'm not going to be myself, then I'm miserable, right? But if I come out and I actually live the life of who I am, I'm, you know, I might be miserable at work because I'm so closeted, but at least I'm free. At least I'm free and I know what I'm doing. I mean, I don't get into a straight marriage and have, you know, all of the ramifications that happen to a lot of times that happen to gay people, is get so enmeshed in a relationship that I don't belong in. And then I hurt a lot of people. It's challenging.
You were there when Don't Ask, Don't Tell came into play.
Yes.
So I guess there were a lot of people in the gay community, I guess it depends if you're in the military, but a lot of people thought, oh, this is great. Here's the answer. And of course, as time went on, a lot of people looked and went, oh no, that's a disaster. What was your take, and how did your life change with when you now continue to serve under the new Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy?
So it was a disaster, but it was less of a disaster. It was before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, being hunted by NCIS, they were trying to catch us. So Don't Ask, Don't Tell was a compromise that said, they won't ask, but you can't tell.
They won't hunt you down.
They won't hunt you down. They won't hunt you down. There was questions on our enlistment documents that said, have you ever had homosexual conduct? Something like that. They took those out of enlistment documents. So they took questions out. They didn't hunt you down anymore, but still during Don't Ask, Don't Tell, still 14,000 service members were separated.
And so, that's because they may not have asked, but if you told, to play off the phrase, if you told but weren't asked, then they could still take action?
Well, I think a lot of people still got hunted down.
Ah.
Just in a different way. And so they might have either been hunted down, or they might have been targeted, or they might have been outed by another. And then they get brought into, you know, their commanding officer or somebody, and that person says, you know, they start to have all these negative ramifications for being gay, and they're being targeted and harassed. And so, you know, I think a lot of people still suffered from that policy. It was less, but it wasn't great, but it was still a step in the right direction. For me, it was a relief to not be hunted. But it was not great. Not
Do
great.
Are you happy you served in the Navy? Do you regret it? Do you wish life had taken a different path?
You know, I love the Navy. I loved serving. I love my country. I love the people that I served with. Seriously, like, I mean, there is a community within the military that I just, like the veteran community, love it. So I have zero regrets. Zero regrets. I had to reconcile my journey, is what I had to do. And that's Hiding from My Life, the book. That's my own reconciliation of my trauma, of the journey. But I really had these two worlds. One was being gay and one was the military, and I love them both, and I still love them both.
What are you doing now? Want to go back to the military?
No, thank you. That's a very tough life. Very demanding.
Is that about age? I mean, what is that a comment about?
Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine sleeping on board a ship right now. That would probably break my back in half.
I would have to be housed at the Four Seasons or something like that.
Yeah, that's not what happens. it's a really demanding life, and there's a reason why they want 18-year-olds to come in, and the max you can stay in is 30 years. So 48 years old, typically, you know, some people get waivers and admirals and things like that. Some go further, but it's hard on your body. It's a tough life. What I'm doing now is I'm sharing the book. I have a website called Hideology. I consider myself a combat certified hideologist, which is my own.
What is Hideology?
I see hiding everywhere. So I I am very passionate about the reasons why humans hide, and not just for being gay, but for body image and for perfectionism and for addiction. All of the reasons why we struggle being who we are is my passion. So I went back and I got my master's in psychology and counseling. I love psychology. Gay people are, and the LGBTQ plus community are not the only people who are hiding. Humans hide. And my passion is to help humans live their lives as they are, period.
And
The
how are
more.
things? I mean, it's in the book, but just to want to bring things full circle in a positive way. Your current
Yeah.
relationship with your mom, with your brothers, sounds like they found a place to be.
Yes. Yeah, my family loves me. And I love my family. We don't agree on everything, but I live in my hometown right now. I watch over my mom. I moved back here after my dad passed away. My mom actually fell last week. She's in, she has a really bad, she cr she broke her skull, fractured her skull. So I'm here. You know, I'm watching over my mom. I'm doing what I can to be supportive, and I live, you know, with my dog. And I really I like my life today. I have lots of people around me. I have great neighbors. I feel very comfortable in my skin today.
Any advocacy in your future? I mean, on these issues, now that the book is out, you're doing interviews, you're out there. So is advocacy a part of your future? I mean, because just because the policy of don't ask, don't tell is gone and one can be openly gay in the military, I'm sure there's still struggles.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, my hope is to build a bridge between those that don't understand, you know, people who are oppressed and those who are oppressed. And so my book, my hope with my book is to open eyes, so that other people see that hiding doesn't just hurt that person, hiding hurts everybody. And so, yes, absolutely, I'm passionate about advocacy. I don't know, I really enjoy, I enjoy my freedom today. And so I will do as much as feels good in my body. And I'm gonna try to listen to my body today and not let myself get, too overwhelmed with all of it.
Well, I congratulate you on the project. The book is called Hiding for My Life, Being Gay in the Navy by Karen Solt, available on Amazon and where good books are sold everywhere. Karen, congratulations. Thanks for spending some time. Good luck on the book tour. And I know you'll do important things in the future, making a difference. That's what life's all about.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
You too.